April is National Bilingual and Multilingual Learner Advocacy Month. That's why we're so excited to tell you about a new special series from Science of Reading, the podcast, that will launch later this month. Over several episodes, we'll talk to leading researchers and practitioners about how the science of reading serves multilingual and English learners, and how to best use the science of reading to support those students in the classroom. That's all starting at the end of this month. Stay tuned to this feed for more.
What if a change in classroom practice could lead to change in reading outcomes? What should reading instruction include to ensure all students have the opportunity to succeed? What does cognitive science tell us about learning to read, and why aren't those learnings applied in our classrooms? Welcome to Science of Reading, the podcast. I'm your host, Susan Lambert from Amplify Education. Join us every 2 weeks as we talk with science of reading experts to explore what it takes to transform our classrooms and develop confident and capable readers. What an honor to have Tim Shanahan as our guest on today's episode. I've heard many folks say that nobody knows literacy research like Tim, and that makes him the perfect choice for this podcast. His list of accomplishments include leading the National Reading Panel, National Literacy Panel for Language Minority Children and Youth, the National Early Literacy Panel, and he helped author the Common Core State Standards. Check out the show notes for his full bio, an amazing body of work. Today, Tim and I focus on middle school literacy needs and what instruction should look like to ensure students are progressing and prepared. We hope you enjoy. Well, Tim, welcome to the podcast. We're so excited to have you as a guest today.
Happy to be here.
I always like to start by asking our guests to explain to our listeners, you know, your journey and how in the world did you end up being one of the leading experts on the subject of literacy?
The latter part of that question is the easier part to answer. I got old. I've been doing this for a long time. I just figured it out a couple of months ago, and in September, like 2 months ago, I've been teaching reading and studying reading for 50 years as of September 2019.
Congratulations. Wow, that's amazing.
I was actually kind of amazed myself. It went fast, and over that time I've done, I've been a teacher and a tutor and a coach and a district administrator and a professor and researcher and so on. So you wear enough hats for enough years, you get pretty good at something. So that's how that came about. I know every so often I'll hear from usually a young professor wanting to know how to do this, and it's kind of you do it one day at a time. You just keep reading and studying and trying to figure things out, and over a very long period of time people start to listen to you.
Yeah, I've heard people say that nobody knows the reading research better than you.
One of the things that I've had a great opportunity with was first the National Reading Panel. And then the federal government had, two follow-up panels, that one that looked at early childhood literacy and one that looked at second language literacy. And being on all those panels and having to deal with all that research and so on certainly put me in a situation that I never would have been if I had just done this all on my own. You would have never had the drive to read that many studies and study that many studies and talk to, we had some pretty great scholars on those various panels, and when they were working these things through, I was always close by to talk to them about this stuff. So I really had an incredible opportunity to get to know the research much more thoroughly than would be typical.
Yeah, it certainly is a community effort. The cliche, it takes a village, but it takes a village to become an expert, I would imagine, too.
Oh, it really, really does. Every time I think I really know what I'm doing and trust my interpretation, I'll talk to a colleague who will have some insight to it that I totally missed or just would have never come up with. You know, that's really how any scientific field works. You know, no matter how good you think you are or how much you think you know, you know, there's always somebody who's got some information, some data that you're not aware of, and you know, you better pay attention.
Yeah, keeping an open mind is so important. I know that you know the science of reading has reemerged, and we've done a lot of talking about what kids need in the younger grades, you know, in terms of word recognition and language comprehension. What we haven't talked about is what does that mean in the older grades? And you're the perfect guest because we wanted to talk about what the science of reading means at the other end of Scarborough when kids get to middle school. And we'd really like to pick your brain on that topic.
Sounds good. And I'm excited by that opportunity. You know, these days that term, you know, science of reading has to a great extent come to mean, you know, phonics instruction or phonics and phonemic awareness instruction. But obviously, science tells us quite a bit more about reading instruction, and reading is still being developed as kids are in middle school and high school and so on. So thank you for that recognition, and let's dig in on this.
So what is it that middle school kids need to have? Where should we be focusing, and what's the development look like for them?
Well, you know, let's just, you know, there definitely are a handful of kids at that level who are still struggling. You know, they're dyslexic or perhaps have some other kind of, you know, reading problem or disorder, or, you know, just haven't had the opportunity to be taught. So there are still a handful of these older kids who are going to need, you know, decoding instruction of some kind, but that isn't, you know, where most kids are. That isn't what most middle school teachers should be doing. That becomes more of a specialized kind of problem. So the things for the developmental reader, the youngster who, even if they're behind, you know, they're behind maybe a year or two, there are, you know, a handful of things that research tells us that they really need to get instruction in, and certainly one of those is vocabulary. Words are important with little kids, particularly because they need to be able to decode them. Words are important with older kids because they particularly have to know their meanings, and so learning the meanings of words and learning how to use the morphology of the language are you know, a big deal. You know, if you look at the correlation between vocabulary and comprehension of young readers, it's a very, very low correlation. But if you look at the correlation, you know, by the time kids are in middle school, it's actually gotten quite high, and it continues to increase as kids move up the grades. Comprehension becomes more and more dependent on vocabulary. So that would certainly be one area of interest and concern.
So we should start that really early too, even though in the younger grades, vocabulary isn't as correlated to comprehension, it's still beneficial to start it early and keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody were bringing me in and saying, you know, we need to raise our first grade reading achievement, you know, how much time should we put into vocabulary? I probably wouldn't devote a lot of time to it. On the other hand, If our concern isn't first grade, but it's how well are these kids going to, say, graduate high school, yep. Not dealing with vocabulary early on is sort of like leaving a time bomb for later. And so, you know, we want to, you know, build kids' language, increase the numbers of words that they know the meanings of, and their ability to make sense of words and context and all that kind of thing from the beginning, but you're certainly going to increase your attention to it as you move up the grades. I think for a lot of middle school kids, they get too little work on vocabulary, and a lot of times that work isn't very good, to tell you the truth. So that's one area. A second one, and I know you have an upcoming podcast with Tim Rosinski, so I don't want to steal his thunder too much, but certainly, you know, an area we don't necessarily talk about a lot with middle school, but oral reading fluency, that ability to read a text so that it sounds like language. If you look, even kids who are right on grade level are still increasing in fluency, usually throughout the middle school grades. You know, if kids are on track and doing really well, typically they'll get about as fluent as they need to be by about the end of eighth grade. But of course, that means that there's still, you know, substantial, you know, growth needed during those years. And of course, not all of our kids are right on level. And so, you know, certainly this idea of teaching fluency in middle school and high school, you know, belongs there. I know Tim has been doing some studies with high schools and even colleges and finding, you know, substantial numbers of readers who frankly are too disfluent to comprehend well. And so this idea of building these kids' fluency is a real important one, and it's often really neglected at these levels. It isn't listed in standards typically, and so it just doesn't get taught, but it's a mistake not to. A lot of times the only thing you'll see in a middle school, you know, if people think that they're addressing fluency, is they'll do something like, you know, round robin reading as they take them through the social studies book. You know, Mary, would you read the first paragraph to us? And Johnny, would you read the second? That's not going to build kids' fluency sufficiently that you're going to get the boost in comprehension that you want to see. A third area, you know, why do we teach vocabulary? It improves comprehension. Why do we teach oral reading fluency? It improves comprehension. But there are some things we can do more directly with meaning, and that is there are some explicit reading comprehension skills that can be taught. In fact, I probably shouldn't have used the word skills, strategies. One of the things that you want readers to do is to be intentional. You want them to try to learn. You want them to try, you know, when a lot of times, you know, students, especially if they're doing assigned work, they're just trying to get it done. Teacher Ted said, read these 10 pages. I'm going to read these 10 pages. I'm not necessarily going to think about them. I'm not going to try to understand it, but I'm going to do my homework. I will read the 10 pages. What you really want kids doing is reading those 10 pages and trying to understand them. And so doing things like, you know, summarizing along the way, you know, what has the author told me so far? Are there parts of this that I'm not remembering? You know, I should go back and look again. That kind of thing is really important. Monitoring your comprehension, paying attention to whether you're understanding. You know, studies of adults say that we're unconscious about 11% of the time on average when we're reading. You know, we're not there. You know, you're thinking about other things. And, you know, but you got to catch yourself essentially stop and go back and reread that. Again, kids don't necessarily do those things. And so there's instruction in those kinds of strategies that are useful. A second area of that I would call written language. And I've already talked about vocabulary and how teaching vocabulary helps kids to comprehend. But there are other aspects of language that we know that if we work on those, we can improve students' comprehension. And so, you know, a lot of times the reason why kids are having trouble understanding a text is the sentences are complicated. Or they're written in a style that, you know, just throws the kids. You know, maybe it's passive voice, or maybe it's, you know, there are a lot of, you know, dependent and independent clauses all kind of stitched together. And so teaching kids how to break down those kinds of sentences and to, you know, make sense of them and to, you know, find the verb and do things like that are really quite useful. Or another one is cohesion. You know, when we write a text, it isn't just a list of ideas, that the ideas have to connect with each other. And research shows that we can teach students this, and when we do, their comprehension goes up. And so, you know, learning how to, track an idea across text through the various ways the author chooses to state that. You know, sometimes they do it through repetition, sometimes they do it through synonyms, sometimes they do it through pronouns, that kind of thing is useful. And finally, discourse structure. substantial body of research showing that teaching kids how to recognize how an author has organized their ideas and to use that organization as a tool to hold the information in your own memory. So, you know, there are all of those kinds of things that can be taught and that can improve reading. Can I just add one more on comprehension? And that is a lot of times when we focus on strategies, and I said that can be a good idea, research is very supportive there, or when we focus on written language, and I've said that's a good idea, when we get real involved in that, a lot of times what happens is we lose sight of the text itself. You know, the teachers start to go, well, you know, he did really well with his predictions today. He didn't understand the text, but that's sort of okay. Or, you know, he was able to break down those sentences the way I wanted. He didn't remember anything that he'd read, but, you know, it was, you know, the whole purpose of doing any of those is to make the content available to the kids. And so it is absolutely essential in any comprehension lesson that the kids come away with knowledge. They learn, you know, whatever the content of that text was, including literature, by the way. So, you know, those are the things you want to see going on in comprehension, building those strategies, increasing that knowledge of written language, and building knowledge. You know, I know a lot of reading programs do things like test kids' skills. You know, we've been teaching reading skills for the last 6 weeks. Now we want you to show us on this quiz that you know them. But they very rarely go back and test the kids' knowledge of the selections that they read to get there. And I think that's a big mistake. We ought to be trying to make sure the kids develop that knowledge.
Yeah, it seems like on a macro level, at least that's what comprehension is all about, right? Like using text and accessing a text to come away from it knowing something different, right?
Exactly. And so the social studies or science teacher gets that, and they often don't give enough guidance to the kids in how to make sense of their text because they're so focused on the content. The reading teacher tends to go the other way. They get so focused on the skill that they want to get across that they forget that, you know, you're not just practicing this skill. You're practicing it on something that can be a source of knowledge. And that part of your job is to make sure the kids come away with that knowledge and not just, oh, yeah, you know, he was able to you know, write a three-sentence summary, so I was happy. Yeah, but did he actually understand the text? Did he come away with much knowledge? Is he going to remember it next week?
Yeah.
That isn't always the reading teacher's focus, but it needs to be.
Sure. So if I just say back to you what I think I heard you say about comprehension is that really there's sort of two buckets, if you will, about comprehension. Knowing that knowledge or new and extended knowledge is like our ultimate goal, that there's a series of strategies a reader engages with, but there's also this this closer attention to the written language or the sentence level to understand how sentences sort of work together. And it brings you to sort of a greater understanding.
Yeah, you know, both at the sentence level and then all those connections among sentences or, you know, how the text is organized and such. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't think we spend enough time on that. I do think people these days, at least in my observations, tend to be doing maybe a bit better with things like comprehension strategies that they've kind of learned to do those and are making sure that those are part of the kids' daily routines. But they're not necessarily making sure that the kids' ability to think about language is really growing. I mean, I can give you an example.
Yeah, great.
Computational linguists tell us that the English language is changing. Now, of course, languages are always changing, but in this particular instance, what they're talking about is our sentences are getting to be more like German sentences in that the verbs are coming later and later in the sentence. This is important because when you're trying to understand language, whether it's written or oral, we're told that to do that, you have to find the verbs. you know, you might not know you're looking for a verb when you're listening to me or when you're reading a text, but you're looking for those verbs so that you can connect the other ideas to those actions or states of being. And what's happened to English sentences over especially the last 50 years is the verbs are migrating further and further to the right. And this is largely coming up about because of scientific language. The subjects of the sentences are getting bigger and bigger. They're using fewer adjectives and more phrases and so on to explain these subjects. So the verbs are getting hidden. And so you have, you know, a 12-year-old kid who's trying to read the science book, and he's struggling with it. He doesn't know why, but it seems so dense. It just seems like it's a whole bunch of nouns. He can't make sense of it. And there's no teacher there sort of saying, hey, now look at this sentence. Let's see if we can find a verb. Let's just go through and do that first. Let's see, you know, if we can break this sentence down and figure out what it's really saying. Nobody's really showing kids to do that very often. And when what we find is when they do, the kids do better. So,
that's interesting.
You know, working with that kind of thing matters.
yeah, it sounds a little like back in my schooling when we learned grammar, right? And so there's a connection to grammar here, but there also must be sort of a reading-writing connection. Like if we're teaching kids to write at this kind of level, that must impact what they're doing on the reading side of it.
Yeah, you know, when I said that we had to teach vocabulary and oral reading fluency and comprehension explicitly, I didn't get to the fourth one, which is writing. And reading and writing are very connected at these grade levels, especially in terms of things like text structure. And there are substantial research findings showing that teaching kids to write about what they read, to summarize it, to critique it and analyze it, to synthesize information from multiple texts, increases kids' comprehension, increases what they learn from the text. So that becomes very, very important. The grammar that I'm talking about, though, isn't the formal grammar that I got in school or that you probably got in school. It's more of an applied grammar. It's less about can you some kind of a sentence diagram, and much more can you make sense of what this sentence has to say and what do you have to do to understand it. And that's, you know, there are lots of sentences that a typical middle schooler reads and he's just going to understand it because his language development is to a level that it's just going to seem automatic. But there are also going to be these sentences that, frankly, the kid reads it and just has no idea what in the heck it says and doesn't know what to do. And of course, if the kid isn't super motivated, you know, he's just going to either keep going on or what I'm seeing happening, especially at the high school level in my observations, when kids hit a couple of these sentences in a row that they just can't make sense of, they start turning pages. You think, well, they just missed that sentence. No, they decide, I can't understand this. Maybe if I go to, you know, the next section, I'll be able to get it.
Yeah.
They lost a page and a half there. They lost,
right.
They just can't make sense of it and they don't know what to do with it. And we just don't, I don't think we offer kids enough support there. There's an old body of research on things like sentence combining and sentence reducing where you essentially on the sentence combining, you take kernel sentences, John went to school, Mary went to school, and that kind of thing. And then you try to put them together and make, bigger, more, complex sentences out of them. And sentence reducing, of course, you do the opposite. You try to take these big sentences and break them down into separate ideas and such. And very, very consistently across that research, there was improvement both to writing and to reading comprehension.
Wow, that's really interesting. And making a bit of a shift back to something that you said about disciplinary. You were talking about the example in science, but I would imagine that, it looks at sentence structure and things that happen within text differently based on the content that you're engaged with. And so with middle schoolers, they must need some support in that.
Yeah, in fact, most states now recognize that and have what are called disciplinary reading standards, disciplinary literacy standards, that what it means to make sense of science is very different than what it means to make sense of text in say a history class or a literature class. Each of these fields of study creates knowledge in unique ways, specialized ways, and those ways of creating and communicating and critiquing knowledge. Because they differ, they really entail different reading and writing skills. They construct different kinds of texts. They use somewhat different language. Their grammar differs. Obviously, their vocabularies differ. And so, essentially, grades 6 through 12, more than 40 states now require that kids be taught those more specialized kinds of reading that you need to know. My wife and I have done, a series of studies where we were looking at the ways, for example, that historians read, how mathematicians read, how chemists read. Trying to understand, what some of those specialized forms are, and what it would take to actually share those with kids in effective ways.
So what does this mean then for the middle school ELA teacher who has maybe 45 minutes in their block? Seems like a lot of work that needs to be done in that 45 minutes.
Well, I think that's something we need to change how we think about. You're absolutely right. If it's the ELA teacher who's responsible for all of this, it's not only a formidable job, it's an impossible job. Frankly, I don't think most ELA teachers, including me, are really equipped or qualified to teach the literacy that's required in, say, a math class or in a science class. I think the way we have to look at it is much more the way my teachers in Chicago did when I was director of reading there, and that is we can't expect kids to learn this kind of thing in 45 minutes, and we can't expect them to learn it in the ELA class. You have to have all the teachers, the science teachers, the social studies teachers, and so on. They have to be knowledgeable about the language and literacy of their field of study, and they have to let kids in on the cognitive secrets of those fields of study. Kids read, say, a history book, and they read it thinking it's factual. They read it thinking that what it is just, telling, the story of how things used to be. They're often bored with that. When you talk to historians, they'll tell you, no, that those texts aren't factual. They're argumentative, that they're claims about history, and that what the reader has to do is join the argument. That these are plausible stories, based on the historical record. They're what we think happened, but a good deal of it is constructed, and you have to really, get inside it and read some primary documents and get multiple perspectives on a text and so on, which is very different than what a science teacher would tell you, or what a scientist would tell you. And so, it's those kinds of things ought to be happening to kids throughout their school day. In Chicago, I mandated 2 hours a day of reading and writing instruction, which scared the heck out of my content teachers because they were sure I meant that we were going to just hire a ton of reading teachers and fire all the content teachers. we wouldn't need them anymore. But what I was really talking about and what we all agreed needed to be done is kids have to be reading and writing in a math class. They need to be reading and writing in a science class and so on. But they need to be doing the reading and writing of those fields of study, building that knowledge base, learning how to deal with the special text features of those fields of study. if you look at a math book or you look at a science book, and we often talk about math and science like they're so closely together, but they're constructed totally differently. The textbooks or the, you know, any of the kinds of texts in these fields, you know, in math, it's a very linear delivery of information. You know, if they want to show you a formula or a chart or a, you know, some kind of graphic, it's embedded right in the text exactly where they want you to see it. In science, because the nature of science, you have to, essentially every science text is going to have both prose and graphics and mathematical formulas and such. And what they you have to do is move among them. You know, you look at the table, you read the sentence, you go back and look at the formula, you know, read another sentence, you know, that kind of thing. And so kids have to learn how to do that kind of reading. Somebody has to actually show them how to use those different text features. And that just isn't happening enough.
Well, it feels like there is a lot of important work to be done in the middle school, preparing them for later schooling as an extension of sort of the things we do with them in the early grades. So as we bring this to a close, I'm wondering if you can give our middle school teachers who are listening some takeaways, like maybe one or two things you really want them to remember as it relates to their work with middle schoolers.
Sure. Well, certainly one thing I would say to the middle school ELA teacher is, you know, I made a big deal about the math and science and social studies teachers, you know, playing their role. The fact is, literature is really a discipline as well, and, you know, that's solely the responsibility of the ELA department. So you've got a big job to do there. You definitely have some role to play in teaching, you know, those general reading strategies and helping kids with, you know, language generally in text so that they, you know, they can, you know, read and write, you know, in certainly some basic forms. But you also have this you know, specialized responsibility for things like a literary close read. You know, what does it mean to do a close read in literature? Well, you know, it means really to try to read very independently. That, you know, try to not you know, connect this text up too much with other texts, but to really deeply evaluate the language choice and the structures that the author has built into their story or poem or play. So that would be one thing. And if I can go one more direction on this, a lot of times the ELA teachers are the ones who get the lowest readers or are given, you know, responsibilities for, you know, perhaps they get a class or two of kids who are just struggling readers, maybe an extra reading class to try to, you know, build their comprehension and such. And I think in a lot of cases, those teachers, because of the rhetoric in the field, often feel like there's really not much they can do. You know, we hear it again and again that, you know, if you don't address kids' reading problems early on, you know, they never get addressed. That isn't because they can't be addressed later, say during the middle school years. It's just that we normally don't do it or we don't do it very effectively. And so they really have some incredible power to make a big difference in these kids' lives, and they really can teach these older students to read better. They just have to, you know, sort of you know, believe that they can do it and you know, put in the work that's necessary for that, which is hard to do if you're not sure that you can actually make any kind of difference. They can make a big difference.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because we do talk about that. We talk about if the end of first grade, they're not on track, they're in trouble. The end of third grade, if they're not on track, they're in trouble. And then, you know, the fourth grade NAEP scores. So it's a really good reminder that even if you have those kids in middle school that are struggling, you still can make a difference in their lives. We really appreciate you being on today, Tim. And if our listeners don't know where to find you and how to follow your work, where can we point them in our show notes?
I would love it if they would come to my website, Shanahan on Literacy. There is tons of information about the teaching of reading. And in fact, if they want to subscribe to my blog posts, they're among the most read in the field. And you know, it's all free stuff and there's no advertising or sales or politics or bad language or anything on the site. So it's something that they can feel very comfortable that they can go there and get a lot of information without a lot of hassle. Thank you. I appreciate being here. Thanks, everybody.
We're so grateful to our amazing guest today and to all of you making a difference in the lives of students every single day. Be sure to check the show notes for resource links from today's podcast, and we want to hear your stories and successes. Follow us on Facebook at Science of Reading, the community, or send an email to sormatters@amplify.com. Tell us what guests you think we should book, or tell us about the research that really excites you. And be sure to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Susan Lambert from Amplify Education.